The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you get frustrated when Christians portray those who fail to share their values as evil. Well, my friend, that is actually an untrue stereotype regarding Christians. We do not portray every single person who disagrees with us as evil. We do refer to all human beings, ourselves especially included, as sinful. But the Bible draws a distinction between being sinful and being evil. We're all sinful, we're not all evil. An evil person is one who has completely given in to sin to the point where they no longer take any responsibility for their actions, where their conscience is gone. And on that subject, there are some current politicians who, I can't look inside their hearts, if they have not completely given in to evil, they sure seem to at least be well along the road. That will be our topic today. And to make the discussion more interesting, I'm joined by a special guest. Steve Baldwin is an author, pundit, and political consultant. He served in the California Assembly from 1994 to 2000. And from 2001 to 2009, he was the executive director of the Council for National Policy. His life work has immersed him at times in strategic projects that took for granted the urgency of the United States relationships and responsibility throughout its own hemisphere. Steve, welcome to our program.
I'm thrilled to be on your show, Bob.
Well, it's good to have you. One of the reasons Steve and I have worked together before occasionally, it's been a few years since I've seen him. We've run into each other at tea parties and other such events. But he's somebody who does not hold back. He's never shy about sharing his opinion. So he ought to fit into our program perfectly. Steve, let me just start by asking you a little bit your assessment of the election year so far. Any predictions? How do you know, Trump took a nosedive in the polls this week for a variety of reasons. How are you seeing things at this point?
Well, it certainly is the craziest election I think I've ever observed in my lifetime. And it certainly is a tipping point for America, whether it's the welfare state or the deficit or the debt or the Islamic threat or the Christian heritage of America. All those things are being threatened. And the election of Hillary Clinton, I think, puts us over the top in every one of those areas. Trump, I have a lot of concerns about him. He's kind of arrogant, kind of vain, kind of gets distracted here and there. But the choices for us as conservatives, as Christians, is the Satan. That's only the best way I could phrase Hillary versus a flawed man, but a man who's generally going to be with us the vast majority of issues, like selections of the Supreme Court. And this race is, for all practical purposes, a toss-up right now. And it's really going to be about the undecided block of people in five or six key swing states like Ohio, South Carolina. And whether or not this undecided block of voters decides to go with the status quo and continue the same kind of policies we've been under for the last 8 years, or do we put someone in there from the corporate world who's a real go-getter, who is not going to allow ourselves to be pushed around by Islamic extremists, who we know is going to be pro-business, who we know is going to cut taxes, who we know will select conservatives to the Supreme Court, and hopefully put America on a whole new direction. So it's really about how I think at this point the two candidates portray themselves. What they say in their ads, in their negative ads or positive ads, what they say to the media, what they say in press conferences, how they handle themselves in debates, because right now it's pretty much up to the large block, right? Maybe as high as 20% of undecided voters that will determine who the next president of the United States will be.
Yeah, and conservatives are quite split. One thing that kind of brought you to my attention again is I read an article you wrote on the San Diego Rostra and noticed it was one of the few pro-Trump articles. I had written another one and it had just been pillaged by the readers. My very good friend Barry Jantz is the editor, and
yes,
he's a great guy, but boy, some of the readers took me to task. So it was a breath of fresh air, and yet you were making a point similar to mine. I didn't get the impression that you loved Trump, and no,
right.
I've spoken out quite a bit against Trump when we had other candidates, but
we don't
have those choices. Are you meeting other conservatives that are coming around, and are you still getting this, oh, I've got to vote my conscience, no way I could vote for Trump?
There are some conservatives like George Will and some other pundits who will never come around. But among the rank and file voters, I think the vast majority of them are realizing they don't want to be asked someday by their children or their grandchildren, Dad, did you allow Hillary Clinton to become president?
Yeah, and the thing is, if we have one more liberal Supreme Court justice, it's not going to matter whether we have a Republican or a Democrat in the White House. It's not going. Would you agree that we also need to do something? I mean, I think even putting this election aside, even if Trump should win, it seems we need another constitutional convention to revisit the kind of power the Supreme Court was meant to have, because it was never meant to be able to overturn decisions by two of the three branches of government when it's only one of the three.
I'm kind of worried about that. I mean, I know Mark Levin has been pushing for an Article 5 convention, and he makes some great arguments also. But there's also a lot of constitutional scholars out there who argue that there is nothing to constrain a constitutional convention from straying from the subject it was called to convene
and
for.
And then make things even worse and change other things in the Constitution.
Yeah, the Constitution's not even clear on who will control the delegate selections. So what if the liberals control the majority of delegates that will be selected to preside over the Constitutional Convention? Will they abolish the Second Amendment? Will they put more power in the hands of the executive branch? I'm a little bit worried about how it would be structured. Who will be the delegates? Will conservatives control the process? I'm worried about a runaway convention. Phyllis Schlafly has warned about runaway constitutional conventions for years. And she says our founding convention was kind of a runaway convention. If you go back and read the history about the founding constitutional convention, the people were being called back to Philadelphia because they were told that the Articles of Confederation were too weak and we need to strengthen them. But they weren't told that we're going to have a whole new government formed. And after they got there, a whole new document was thrust upon them called the Constitution, and we're going to have an actual federal government, in which some of them, like I think it was John C. Calhoun, never voted for the Constitution. Several refused to vote for the Constitution because it was far more than they had come to Philadelphia.
Well, it probably did look somewhat antithetical to the purposes of the revolution from England at that time.
It did. They were worried about it. And so our founding constitutional convention was in itself kind of a runaway convention. It ended up with a product that was not what it was originally called to do. So people argue about that. Well, that could happen again. I don't know.
It's like, be careful what you wish for. What are the other alternatives? I interviewed a constitutional scholar on my show who said that the other branches of government could just ignore what the Supreme Court does because they actually have the power to do that. Do you see any other alternatives for reigning in the Supreme Court aside from a constitutional convention?
It's called nullification, and there were efforts to nullify a certain unconstitutional acts by the federal government by governors. And a lot of constitutional scholars believe that even today, governors have a right to nullify.
Because it goes back to the individual state rights.
Right, and individual state rights, and that the Constitution grants them the power to say, hey, that does not comport with the constitutional principles that I'm aware of, and that we're not going to carry that out as a result. Now, we haven't seen nullification probably in 100 years. Actually, you know, there is something similar to nullification going on right now. We just don't think about it like that. The federal government bans marijuana as a controlled subject substance. But
Colorado ignored it.
States in America, in California, we have allowed different degrees of legalization, medical marijuana, blah, 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 Colorado full legalization. The federal government has banned all that. And it still to this day says that the constitutional, the Colorado law and the California law on marijuana is illegal. But the governors have basically said, we're going to go ahead and do it anyways. So
And then, of course, the sanctuary cities are kind of ignoring.
Sanctuary cities are ignoring.
Of course, they know that the head of the federal government's not going to enforce it, so that makes it a little
easier. Are examples of states ignoring federal law today. So why can't the states ignore federal law, say, some federal welfare mandate or open borders laws that come out of D.C. or something like this?
Well, we're going to have to figure something out because like you and I just said it, what really matters is who the next Supreme Court justice is going to be.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
However, we would both agree probably that that shouldn't have to matter. They should never have been given that much power, but they've been given it. It's kind of been grandfather clause, and so now it is a problem.
Yeah, it's called judicial review, which did not exist in the beginning. It came around like 40 years after America's founding. There was one decision in which they argue that we have the right to review acts of Congress. A lot of constitutional scholars believe that that was an improper decision, and that by ruling that way, the Supreme Court gave themselves more power. So instead of three equal branches of government, you have the Supreme Court pretty much dominating the whole government. They can rule, outlaw anything, legalize anything. We don't believe that was the actual model proposed by the founding fathers.
Yeah, and so now they're just viewing the Constitution as a suggestion box that they can heed or ignore.
Right.
Okay, well, getting back to this election then. So the stakes are high. I know you came here armed with a lot of opinion and research about both the Obama and the Clinton. So hold with me over the break. We'll be right back. My guest, Steve Baldwin.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, joined today by conservative activist Steve Baldwin. So, Steve, we were talking about this election, and we want to continue to get your take on what's going on right now.
Yeah. Well, one of the things we need to be concerned about is election fraud. And I've been writing about that, and I'm working with Michael Connelly at the U.S. Justice Foundation to try to file some Freedom of Information Act requests. regarding a military vote. A lot of people don't realize this, but about 80% of the military vote was disqualified in 2012 because their ballots from overseas came in beyond deadlines. And so Congress passed an act called the MOVE Act, M-O-V-E, which stands for Military Overseas Voter Act or something like that. And it requires states to have a longer deadline and make an effort to collect all absentee ballots.
Wouldn't
from
that
overseas.
Be the least they can do from the ones that are actually over there bleeding for our country?
You would think so. However, Obama has the power to grant waivers from following this federal law. And in 2012, he granted waivers to something like 24 states, including key swing states.
You think Romney might have won if this had not happened?
Absolutely. It could have tipped the election. And so now we're trying to find out how many states are being granted waivers again, because we want to shame them. We want to go to the veterans groups and make a big stink nationwide in the news media and try to shame these states into following this law and making sure military vote is counted. And at the same time, we have millions of illegal aliens we believe are voting. Thanks to Obama. Obama's Justice Department, which is threatening to sue states and haul them into court if they require an ID to register or an ID to show up and vote at the polls.
And isn't it interesting that the same people who are pushing to not allow polls to require ID are also pushing to give ID to illegal immigrants? So on two fronts,
it's bizarre
getting this pushed through.
And I think that's a Democrat formula. Massively register and get out to vote illegal aliens, suppress the military vote, which we all know is dominated by Republicans.
Acorn was having Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck vote back in the 2008 election.
Exactly. Yeah. And I pray to God that Donald Trump is hiring all kinds of election law attorneys to look into these issues.
He keeps speaking about election fraud and a rigged election. He's not just blowing smoke this time. He's really on to say.
Good.
He ought to explain it, though, more and explain what's going on instead of just shouting out the word fraud.
Yeah, he needs to get into more details because we have fraud in this country, and we believe that fraud was used in 2012. Indeed, the whole effort to suppress the Tea Party and conservative organizations by the IRS was an election ploy to silence those groups from criticizing Obama during his reelection. I mean, if that was a Republican president, probably would have been impeached for that.
Absolutely.
And yet nobody was held accountable. Nobody went to jail. Lois Lerner is...
She just has a new job now.
I think she got transferred somewhere else, yeah.
Plus, she says she's going to take the Fifth, and then she goes on and says, but I'm not guilty. Once you've taken the Fifth, you're supposed to shut up and not say anything else on the stand.
Exactly. So we need to watch out for massive immigration fraud, illegal immigration fraud, suppression of military vote, all those kind of things the Trump campaign is going to have to pay attention to if we are going to win this race.
Okay. Now, as you've done a lot of research on the Obamas and the Clintons. So our audience already knows my opinion on a lot of these things, but what kinds of things have you looked into that you might say is not quite as common knowledge? We all hear about the scandals in the news. What are some of the things that are not quite as commonly known?
Well, the effort to appease the Islamic threat is far more organized and sinister than I think most people realize. Obama issued a number of executive orders, some which are kind of secretive, throughout his administration to promote Islam. Whether it's hiring Muslims, whether it's bringing them in from other countries. But they tend to favor not just any old Muslim, but radical Muslims. The State Department, the CIA, I mean, even NASA has a Muslim outreach program. He has given credibility to the radical Muslim groups like Islamic Society of North America, ISNA, CARE, MSA, Muslim Brotherhood.
And Kara's been caught being connected to the Muslim Brotherhood.
Most of these groups have been named as co-conspirators in the Holy Land Foundation terror funding case. They were all listed. They were all raising money for terrorism overseas. And even overseas, it looks like there are Muslim Brotherhood appointees throughout the State Department, throughout the Foreign Service that are promoting Muslim Brotherhood parties in Libya, in Egypt, almost every country that Hillary and Obama and John Kerry have interfered with. They have removed a Muslim, which was a strong man, but he was somewhat pro-America, or at least not favorable towards extremists. he was actually cooperating with us. I'm talking about Gaddafi. I'm talking about Mubarak in Egypt, so forth and so on. But those were removed and replaced with hardcore fundamentalist Muslim Brotherhood types in four countries now, I think that's going on. So the Middle East has become far more radical and anti-America under the leadership of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton than at ever any time in our history, which is going to pose problems in the future for us that is unbelievable.
Describe a little bit America under a Hillary Clinton president. Some of the things that would start changing.
Well, she will basically, I think, continue Obama's policies on the foreign policies that I'm talking about with a kind of a phony war on terrorism where you have a couple drone strikes here and there, and you do a few things to make the American public think you're doing something, but the reality is you're not really defeating the war on terror. They're just growing at a faster rate. She will continue to fight for illegal alien legislation that gives welfare benefits, driver's licenses, so forth and so on. And basically, I think she will institutionalize the illegal alien vote as a regular voting block of the Democrat Party. And she will make that a far more institutionalized effort than has Obama. I think she will institutionalize the welfare state, which, you know, half of all America is now receiving some form of welfare. She will make that an institutionalized Democrat loyal voting bloc and make it clear to those people that if they vote Democratic, their benefits will continue. There's ways that the Democrat Party has been doing that. For example, handing out a voter registration form when you apply for welfare. And I think there's things that she will do to further that connection between welfare and voting Democratic. So I think the election of Hillary makes it almost permanent that there will be Democrat administrations for as far as I can see. There may not be a Republican administration ever again because she will lock in voting blocks and increase fraud. She'll make it an art to the point where we may not ever have a chance. Plus, she'll have at least three Supreme Court appointments.
Which will just canonize anything else she wants to do.
Exactly. They will approve everything, every centralized scheme to centralize power in a federal branch. They will accept and approve. We may be on our way to socialism under Hillary, and there may not be turning back.
Now, I know she was a student of Saul Alinsky, but
she was.
Putting that aside for a moment, the Clintons to me have always seemed like politicians. With Obama, he has a very obvious agenda. And when public opinion strays away from it, he doesn't seem to care. He doubles down. Would Hillary be such a politician that she might be swayed more by public opinion?
I actually think she's more clever than Obama.
Okay, well, hold on to that thought. Right. We'll find out why Hillary's more clever than Obama when we return. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Bob Siegel's latest novel, Push the Winds Around, is now available in both ebook and print copies. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Talk about a good read. Have you ever thought, if only God would allow me to go back in time to right my wrongs? What if I could change those decisions I made? What would be the outcome? Would the changes make a difference? If you have ever thought about that, then this book is your challenge.
The story is so good you won't want it to end. You'll see why it deserves 5 stars. Bob Siegel, you've done it again. Can't wait for the sequel. Push the Winds Around, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
And we're back. This is Bob Siegel and Steve Baldwin. Steve, you were about to tell me why you think Hillary is actually more clever than Obama.
Well, Obama is clearly a hard left socialist progressive activist and devotee of the hard left. Hillary likes to portray herself as a little bit more moderate, but the results are the same. She's more clever at portraying her left-wing policies as mainstream or portraying herself as someone in sync with the vast majority of Americans. But when you look back on all the things she's done throughout her career, the results are the same. I mean, as Secretary of State, she virtually turned the Middle East into a hotbed of radical Islam. And there is no moderation whatsoever in her Middle Eastern policies. And you look at what she did when her husband was president. She tried to claim their health care thing was a very sensible and moderate plan. It was extremely radical. It was so radical, it was completely rejected by Congress. It called for complete and socialist control of health care beyond what Obama's even done with Obamacare.
And in fact, that was a Democratic Congress the first 2 years.
It was.
So even they found it too radical.
Even the Democrats found it too extreme.
Wow.
But she has always tried to, I think, put more effort into portraying herself and her policies as more moderate, even though they're as radical as Obama. So I she's more of a spinmeister, I guess, is the best way to say it. And therefore, much more dangerous, I think.
Yeah. Now, the Bernie Sanders people, how many of them do you think are going to go for Hillary and how many are going to defect, maybe vote for Trump, maybe just stay home?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I buy the whole idea that 20-30% are going to vote for Trump. I know I've heard those numbers thrown around. I mean, understand that Bernie's people, a lot of them are hard leftists on a whole range of issues. The only thing they might like in Trump is his
trade.
His decision to review trade decisions. Is that enough to cause someone to break ranks with Hillary? You know, maybe, but I think it's a much smaller percent. I think there's probably a bigger percent that will stay home and not vote for anyone because they're mad that when WikiLeaks produced evidence that the DNC was rigging various processes around the states to favor Hillary. And now we heard an announcement from Julian Assange from WikiLeaks. Did I pronounce his name right, Assange?
Yeah, I believe so. And with the announcement about the October surprise?
Yeah, he's going to have more information about how they rigged the elections.
Now, why do you suppose he's not also talking about releasing things on Trump? He seems to be going after the Democrats.
He does not like Hillary. He's kind of a, you know, he's a libertarian anarchist kind of guy. He thinks Hillary's a warmonger. He likes some of Trump's statements that, you know, we shouldn't have gone into Iraq to begin with, but now that we're in, we need to finish the battle. But Trump is more, I think, reluctant to use U.S. force unless we're directly threatened. And I think something about Trump he likes, that Trump is shaking up the whole political establishment. And because these people, WikiLeaks, are all about shaking up establishments in the entire world. I mean, they get leaks from politicians all over the whole world. And so, yeah, there might be more releases here by WikiLeaks that I think embarrass Hillary, and that might shift more people into the not voting at all category. There might be information on the Hillary Foundation that we keep on hearing rumors of that definitely connected beyond a shadow of a doubt that those 30,000 emails that were deleted were all about exchanging money to her foundation in return for pursuing certain policies as Secretary of State that would benefit that group in question. That's what those 30,000 emails may have addressed.
Yeah, there's so much talk about the fact that she deleted emails, not nearly enough talk about what would have been in them and why she might have deleted them.
Exactly.
I would think that would be the more important conversation.
Yeah, they're not about her wedding and Chelsea's dress. Yes. You can't have 30,000 emails about your daughter's wedding dress.
She was just covering up Chelsea's guest list, that's all.
Yeah. 30,000 emails is a lot, and I think that she was making herself very, very wealthy by pursuing these policies on uranium. I mean, people don't understand, but she basically gave the okay as Secretary of State to allow a Canadian company to be sold to the Russians, which has rights over something like 30% of our strategic uranium supply. I mean, this is what you need for making nuclear weapons with, for crying out loud. And Russia has a treaty with Iran to provide them with nuclear materials for their bombs.
Well, who's to say that some of that wouldn't even go directly to Iran?
It could be going right to Iran. So we may be giving Iran uranium right now, thanks to Hillary. But, you know, this is a pattern. People forget that when her husband was president, she was allowing or forcing the State Department Import-Export Controls Office to soften their restriction on a high technology that allowed China to improve their missile guidance technology. In return, China, or groups controlled by China, gave millions and millions of dollars to the Clintons. And when Congress held hearings on it, 32 witnesses left the country. The hearings went nowhere because no one showed up. All the witnesses ditched the country. They're mostly Chinese citizens. And so we never got to the bottom of that. But we're talking a massive technology transfer to communist China that may endanger the future of America someday in exchange for money. Hillary was at the very center of that scandal. Chinagate, they called it. And The Year of the Rat is a book that was all about it. I think that was one of the greatest books ever written about that scandal. If you really want to get scared about Hillary, read The Year of the Rat. But, you know, so here we have uranium. Over and over again, she has enriched our enemies or given them technology that threatened the future of America in exchange for money. She has no scruples at all about jeopardizing national security in exchange for money and power.
So here's the question. How come so few people seem to care about this? They take polls and people say they don't trust her. They may not know all the details like you do,
but
they don't trust her. They do believe she lied. And yet they're still ready to make her president. And I know Trump has his problems too, but I'm convinced if she was running against a better candidate, she'd still have quite a following. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Looking for a place where you can be yourself without having to act more spiritual than you really are? Looking for a church where you can have the dynamics of a large worship service, but the intimacy of a small group? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego by 94 in Hamasha? I know you'll enjoy the preaching of nationally famous speaker, Pastor Jim Garlow. You can also get to know people through a midweek small group. And for those who want to dig deeper into the Bible, a whole series of classes are offered on Sunday mornings. I teach one of them myself, Forbidden Table Talk, same name as my column, a time to bring up any Bible-related question at all. I would love to see you there. Now, I'm not saying Skyline doesn't have other good classes that you could take as an alternative to mine. I'm just saying don't take any of those. Take Forbidden Table Talk. Actually, you'll enjoy any experience you choose at Skyline Church. Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. This tide is turning. We have never in the history of our country had a more important election year than the one coming up. Here to talk about this is conservative activist Steve Baldwin. We were getting into the question of why Hillary, when so few people trust her, is still getting the following she's getting.
Yeah, that is a great mystery. And Americans are so distracted by technology and our cell phones and our video games and our football and other sports that we tend not to even focus in on politics until the last week or two. And I think it's key that Trump start to address these issues in a little bit more detail than he has thus far.
He can't just keep shouting crooked Hillary. He's got to explain why.
Exactly. And, you know, I have an idea, and I've actually run it by the Trump campaign already, that this movie, Hillary's America, is such a powerful movie documenting Hillary's corruption that I, if I were Donald Trump, I would somehow come up with a program to go into the cities and all the key swing states and buy tickets for everyone who's undecided.
That would be awesome. Just pack out the theaters.
Pack out the tickets. Pack out the theaters with undecided voters. Tell them if you're undecided, truly undecided, we will admit you for free and we'll pay for your admission ticket.
Yeah, folks, if you have not seen the movie Hillary's America by Dinesh D'Souza, you've got to see that.
And that movie, more than anything Trump could ever say, explains to the average person how corrupt the Democrat Party and Hillary in particular is.
And the history of the Democrat Party, people don't realize that they were the party of slavery, the party of segregation, Jim Crow laws. They think that was the Republicans all those years.
They think it was. And virtually everything, every effort to block the civil rights legislation that was carried out by the Democrat Party, the first congressmen were Republican, not Democrat. All the Jim Crow laws, the KKK was basically the military wing of the Democrat Party. And most of the Democrat presidents from that era were just complete and total racist. And that movie really shows that in great detail. I want to urge any listener out there, if you have any questions whatsoever about Hillary Clinton and what she's all about and what in general the Democrat Party is all about, you have to go see this movie. It's done really well with professional actors and everything is documented. And that movie told me a lot about Hillary that I didn't even know about. And I'm a lifelong, political person.
And Dinesh D'Souza is an Indian immigrant. This is not some white man's movie. And
yes,
when a director gets thrown in jail for his first movie by the president of the United States, don't you think you're curious to see his second movie? I would think that alone would get you there to take a look at it.
Yes, his first movie angered the Democrat establishment so much that they figured out a way to actually make himself serve jail time for a campaign finance infraction, which I've never heard.
Which had nothing to do with funds he was receiving. He was just guilty of giving too much to somebody. And for that, he goes to prison.
Right. Never before in history has anyone gone to prison for that.
So it's like when the Obama administration jailed the Egyptian director of that video that they tried to blame Benghazi on. That director, to my knowledge, is still sitting in jail right now.
He is. He's another political prisoner. And in fact, I wish he would get a good attorney to fight that, because I don't think there's anything he did or that was actually illegal. I think they actually pursued immigration issues after him.
Well, they found, they always find some lower technicality to get him on. But the real reason he's in there is the video. And Hillary bragged about that to the parents. She said, we're going to go out and get him. That's what she's lying about now and claiming that she didn't say. But you've got to wonder why some mother would make a story like that up when we're talking about the death of her son.
Unbelievable. Yeah, unfortunately, we've entered an era in which we have political prisoners in America.
Now, you were talking about Hillary's connection to the Muslim world, too, and some program she's trying to sponsor.
Well, you know, I'm working on a piece right now for Western Journalism, they've commissioned me to write a piece about Hillary and her connection to radical Islam. And going way back into her history, she was doing favors for radical Islamic groups and causes. Turns out she was chair of the New World Foundation, which was giving money to Palestinian causes back in the 1980s.
And yet she claims to be pro-Israel.
Yeah, right. And turns out that from 2005 to 2008, she received large campaign contributions from an Iranian government front group. And that, for the last decade or so, she's received multi-millions of dollars from fundamentalist Islamic regimes all over the world, like Saudi Arabia and Yemen, Qatar, so forth and so on. And so she is tight with the radical Muslim world. And sure enough, when she was Secretary of State, she set up a program, an outreach program, which brought in radical Muslim leaders, put them on tour all over America, or she sent Americans to radical Muslim countries and put them on tour there. And she covertly created coalitions in Libya and Egypt to throw out governments that were modestly pro-American, replace it with jihadist-type governments. She has created propaganda films that promote radical Islam, official State Department propaganda films. She has created, she has given visas to actual convicted terrorists. And her chief of staff, Huma Aberdeen, who's from Iran.
Anthony Weiner's
Anthony Weiner's, Congressman Weiner's wife. She is an absolute total security risk.
Well, and weren't a lot of the emails in question between her and Hillary?
They were. And people need to understand that Aberdeen's mother was a member of the women's branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. Her father ran an Al-Qaeda, kind of an Al-Qaeda support group. And Huma edited the newsletter for her father's group before she went to work for Hillary. I mean, Huma's entire family is connected to radical Islamic causes.
And, you know, if she becomes president, Steve, a conversation that we're having right now over the radio could end up being against the law. As it is, Loretta Lynch in Obama's Justice Department has promised to prosecute people that speak against Islam, even now.
Well, not only that, they promoted that, the International IOC, International Islamic Conference, and the Human Rights Committee of the United Nations, before both bodies, Hillary promoted legislation that would criminalize negative discussions of Islam.
In fact, she and Obama are both pretty much into the idea of letting our Constitution be subservient to international law, aren't they?
Or Sharia law, or both. And it's ICC, International Criminal Court. They don't have a problem with having judges on the Supreme Court that will subvert U.S. law to international law, which is outrageous. But there's already a couple of judges on the Supreme Court right now that actually believe, that actually have cited international precedent over U.S. law.
Speaking of Sharia law, during the Democratic Convention, we had the Muslim father of a fallen soldier.
Yeah.
And he took out this little pocket constitution and waved it at Donald Trump. Now, I knew nothing about this guy when I was watching him, but I had a hunch and I did some research. I'm guessing you did some research too. Let's tell the audience a little bit about this guy's background when we come back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. Buying or selling a home? Feeling overwhelmed? Facing what seems like unlimited choices? Believe me, your first and most important step is to find the right person to represent you and look out for your interests. Somebody who will help you save money while buying or make money for you when you sell. So listen carefully as I offer the best advice you're ever going to hear. What you want to do is contact Realty Executives All Area, and you want to ask for my good friend, Fred Falduti. Fred has managed literally hundreds of real estate transactions in the San Diego area and has handled just about any scenario you can imagine. Believe me, folks, you don't want to navigate the landmines of this economy without a skilled and experienced guide. But Fred is so much more. He will look after your interests as if they were his own. Give him a call or contact him online, Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area, 619-401-2150. That's 619-401-2150 or fredfalduti.com.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out his online column, Forbidden Table Talk, published and hosted weekly by Communities Digital News. Bob is also a regular contributor to San Diego Rostra. We invite you to visit Bob's website at www.bobsiegel.net. You can listen to previous radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and find information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. Bobsiegel.net.
I'm joined today by conservative activist Steve Baldwin. Steve, the time went by so quickly. We're down to our last segment. What did you find out when you looked into this Muslim aggrieved parent while he was waving the Constitution at Trump?
Well, I think the whole thing was pretty much a show by the Democrats. They were very clever in coming up with this whole thing, because it turns out that there's evidence that he supported Sharia law.
Oh, he's written articles.
And
a connection to Muslim Brotherhood. How much of a connection, we're not sure, but there is a connection.
You cannot support the Constitution and support Sharia law. They are both incompatible with one another. Sharia law does not recognize freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion, none of that.
And the things he's written are not shy about saying that. And so when he gets out the Constitution, that's a little disingenuous.
He's also an open borders guy. He's got a law firm that fights for his clients to get him to America. So he hates Trump because of Trump's would put him out of business basically by closing down the border.
You know, and I knew none of this while I was watching him speak, but I said, if the Democrats put him up there, there must be more to this guy than meets the eye. And boy, I was not disappointed when I looked into it.
There certainly was. And, you know, I'm sorry that his son died, but they definitely exploited the death of his son to make a political point.
And it's the father that we're indicting. I don't know anything about the son.
Exactly.
He probably was a war hero, but it's the father that
was
waving it.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, getting back to Trump, then it seems like Hillary knows how to bait him, and it seems like he keeps taking the bait.
He does, and he needs to stop that. He needs to focus on her trustworthiness, her scandals, her history of lying, her a lot of things that came out in Clinton Cash. I'd wish he would memorize entire passages from Peter Schweizer's book about Clinton Cash and start talking about some of the actual incidences. There's 20 or 30 separate incidences in the book, which make it very clear that she changed State Department policy. And within a week or two, money came flooding into her foundation from the entities that benefited from that policy. He should share those kind of stories. He should have Peter Schweizer come on with him and talk more about these stories at different events. But, you know, I do think that despite all of Trump's flaws, this we need to make sure that we get united on this. It just, I'm sick to my stomach to hear conservative pundits and bloggers like Eric Erickson of Red State and George Will and others say we're not voting at all.
Oh, and they talk about how we've got to keep the Republican Party pure. Excuse me, with our Republican on the brink, I'm not sure I care that much about the future of the Republican Party.
There may not be a Republican Party if Hillary wins.
Well, and as far as the Republican Party being pure, didn't that ship sail long ago when we gave them back the House and the Senate, and they, and like cowering weaklings, they went along with every stupid thing Obama did?
That's the thing.
Including unconstitutional executive orders.
Exactly right, Bob. And you know what? So many of these people who are never Trumpers, as they call themselves, and who are claiming they won't vote at all, we're all aboard the Romney campaign during the primary when there was more conservative candidates. They were claiming Romney was a conservative superstar. We now know he wasn't. We now know that Romney was he actually led the state in homosexual marriage, in cap and trade, a global warming law, in Romney care. I mean, the three main issues of the left, Romney as governor of Massachusetts led the charge in those three issues. And yet George Will and all these people were acting like Romney was the second coming of the Messiah, but now they have troubles with Trump.
It seems like it's a personality thing with Trump, because when you listen to his policies, they're not that bad. Now, I know he's changed positions. With myself with Trump, I listen to what he says. My problem with him is I'm not necessarily convinced he'll really do those things. But when I listen to them, I'm going, you know, if he did two or three of these things, that really wouldn't be that bad.
That's the thing. If Trump will only do two or three of the big things, rebuild the military, shut down the border, cut taxes, that'd be huge. And, you know, there is some evidence that he's going to govern as a conservative. I know five people on his campaign team. They're all lifelong, hardcore conservative activist types.
And if he keeps Newt Gingrich and people like that around him,
if he's surrounding himself with the conservatives right now, most likely he'll surround himself with the conservative appointments.
And Ben Carson, I think, could be a very steady voice and influence on him.
Yeah, from every indication, we're going to have a lot of people appointed around him who share our views. There's going to be probably a couple times when we get mad at him. Of course, there's a couple times when we got mad at Reagan. He won't be with us 100%, but I think he's going to be with us 85%.
And it is refreshing to see somebody talk without a filter. It's kind of his greatest asset and greatest liability.
Yeah.
Same. There's times I listen to him and I'm going, good, he's not being politically correct.
Yeah.
Then there's other times I go, well, you know, a filter might have helped with that one.
You know, he's completely unfiltered. I hope most voters realize that. He's not a politician. He's never been one.
He's thinking out loud.
He's thinking out loud. So he's going to say things that most
That we're all thinking, but he's the one that
thinking,
says it.
Yeah. But the pollsters and the consultants are all cringing. But we know that that kind of gut conservative feeling that he has is going to carry over to the White House if elected.
Yeah.
And that... That's what I don't call him an ideological conservative because he's really not.
Yeah, he's
not,
more of a populist.
He's more of a populist. He's more of a gut conservative. He's conservative because of the way he was raised by his mother and father to believe in America, that America was a place that you could be successful if you work hard. That's
he hasn't
what I call
thought it through like a William F. Buckley.
Yeah, he doesn't read National Review. He hasn't read Burke's. He doesn't read all this intellectual scholarly stuff that the conservative movements produce. But he's what I call a gut conservative. And that makes me feel good that I think most of the time, the vast majority of the time, he will decide on the conservative side when carrying out policy as president.
And
of the
he's
States.
The first one that I've ever heard talk about overturning the Johnson Amendment.
Yes. I mean, Bush didn't talk about that. I mean, gosh, we've got all kinds of religious persecution going on. He's also promised that he will protect us from persecution. If, you know, we hear all these stories about Christian businessmen being harassed because they refuse to sell a cake to a homosexual wedding.
Yeah, whereas if a Muslim businessman wants to refuse to sell pork, that's a whole different story.
That's a whole different story. And Trump seems to me that he'll be with us on that issue, that he will appoint Supreme Court judges who will be with us on religious liberty. Religious liberty was written by our founding fathers to trump all that stuff. If you wanted to practice your religion in the course of your business practices, you should have the right to do that.
Yeah, this idea that it's got to be only in this building with a steeple called a church on a Sunday. So the state's going to start defining the church for us. The New Testament defines the church as the people out in their everyday lives.
The whole definition of being a Christian is that you are carrying out your faith in all aspects of your life, whether it's your business or inside the church or outside the church. And the idea that we're allowing liberals now to encroach, telling businessmen that you have to sell to a homosexual couple, even though that violates your moral code, your moral beliefs, is outrageous. And Trump's been the only one that's actually talked about that.
And they got away with this by boiling the frog slowly and doing it incrementally, because it started out saying, how's it going to affect you if a gay person gets married? Well, if that's all they were going to do, it wouldn't affect us. But now they're
now
slowly,
it's affecting all
for
aspects.
All their talk about
adoption
separation
policy,
between churches,
custody
everything.
Policies, free speech issues, freedom of association issues. I believe they're going to come after. Well, they're already talking about legislation in Sacramento where they're trying to come after churches, saying that churches and Christian schools have to hire homosexual pastors and teachers eventually. I mean, it's a slippery slope. Liberalism never stops at what you hear them talking about.
Because power, when people get a taste of power, it's never enough. They want
it's more. Never enough, and it always leads to more and more attacks on our freedoms.
And their whole foundation was people are born gay. Even if we wanted to say the jury was still out on that,
right?
Now, because they got that sold, now they can go and say, well, when elementary school kids want to decide what restroom they want to use, they can choose their identity. It has nothing to do with the way you're born anymore. And yet they use the way you were born as the way of achieving this much political
even
power.
Even though there's completely lack of scientific evidence, even that Human Genome Project where they brought together, 300 of the world's top geneticists, they couldn't find any evidence whatsoever of a homosexual gene.
No, they couldn't. It's all speculation. Steve, it was a blast having you.
Oh, it's great being on your show,
subject
Bob.
Matter, but I hope you'll come and be on again sometime.
I'll be back again, Bob.
All
Thank
right.
you so much.
Wonderful. We'll see you next week, everybody.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.